The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. You must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks Boots and Waggles sounds like a pet store. That's Lenny.
I'm Mina Kimes.
And I am joined, as always, on Tuesday. I didn't think you'd laugh at that one because I didn't think it was that good when I wrote it.
Yeah,
I thought
about it. It was fun, though.
You know, Boots and Waggles.
I feel like it's the word combo. Waggles and Boots is hard to say without smiling.
You have to say them together, always. Dominique, you tweeted something during last night's Monday night game that I thought was very apt, which is that it felt like watching 90s football. We're going to talk about that game. We're also, because that game is not the sexiest, I also do want to talk to you about Thursday night football, which is a lot sexier, I would say. And then we're going to pick our winners and losers from this week. But the 90s football thing, not just the style, the emphasis on the running backs, but also like just something about Cowboys, Giants, primetime, those two quarterbacks, 90s. The whole thing felt
they were
super
under
90s.
Center. Yeah. It's like all we needed was a fullback and it would have been so 90s.
Which is weird.
One fullback out there.
Because a lot of the really good teams right now are using fullbacks, but they're not using them in 90s ways. They're using them in fun and creative ways. I think, was it last week when, when the Ravens, the Patriots, oh no, it was this week, pardon me. The Ravens and Patriots playing and then the Bills and Dolphins. And I was thinking like, oh my God, like all of these teams except for the Patriots use fullbacks, which is crazy because that's a team we usually associate with fullbacks. But anyways, I digress. Just treetops, coming away from the Giants-Cowboys game, has it changed your mind about anything, like, significant?
The Cowboys are better than I thought.
Agree.
They're not Super Bowl contenders, but I thought that they were a bad team with Dak. And they seem to be, like, a competitive team without him. The defense is what it boils down to for me. Is obviously, we're going to gravitate to the big stories. Cooper Rush and Zeke having a good game and Pollard playing well. Offensive line protecting Rush and Kellen Moore tapering back his game plan the last couple weeks. But to be completely honest, with what happened was their defense kept them in the game the last 2 weeks. And, I mean, even the first week when they lost to the Bucks, the defense is just keeping them in the games and making plays. It's not just Micah Parsons anymore. DeMarcus Lawrence stepped up. Armstrong played well. The whole D-line played well. Diggs dropped a pick, which I didn't know could happen, but then he ended up catching one later. But yeah, I think that's the thing. Is I respect Dan Quinn as much as the next guy, and I thought they had a couple talented guys on that defense, but I kind of chalked last year's defensive success up to like turnover luck.
Yeah,
and they didn't even have any in this game. The one they got at the end didn't really count. I mean, it was right. Like to close the game out. They didn't have any games. They just played good defense. They gave up that one long run to Saquon, but it's been 3 weeks now that their defense just plays well, and that's not fun to talk about.
Yeah, the Cowboys defense was like incredibly dominant last year in just about every advanced metric, but going into the season, I don't think anyone really believed that they would be able to sustain it because of what you alluded to, which is the turnovers, which tend to regress year to year. And the fact, I think just like beyond the superstars, I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of huge names in the secondary, notably.
Yeah.
I would say linebacker, then outside of the pass rushers you mentioned. But the truth is, they're just good across the board. And you talk about Trevon Diggs. He's better this year than he was last year, which is so interesting. Because it's like last year he was overrated, and this year he might be underrated. Because consistently, he is super sticky in coverage. It looks like his eyes are better. He's playing with more discipline. I don't see him jumping routes like crazy anymore. And if you have a superstar pass rusher and then other really good pass rushers around him and a superstar corner in today's NFL, that's a good defense.
Where's everybody who was coming down on Diggs last year and saying he's boom or bust, he's not a really good corner? Like, those people should be out in droves right now saying he's a great corner just because he doesn't have 13 interceptions through 3 weeks. Like, this is the type of cornerback play that they want, right?
I think...
Are you one of those guys?
Friend of the show, no, but Deontay Lee, who was very critical of his play last year, I think I saw praising him this year. And he's a very astute observer of defensive play. But yeah, this is a good defense. I also want to say I agree with your point at the beginning, which is how the Cowboys are just kind of better overall. Because now that, look, it's a really hard week one to know what's what. And now that the dust is settling a little bit, we know that the Bucs defense is probably the best in the NFL. So while, yes, this offense struggled, the offensive line looked terrible week one, Dak Prescott was really bad, now we know that was the Bucs. So I think, like, now that we're able to, like, zoom out a little bit and kind of see these teams for who they are, you can kind of appreciate the difficulty of that matchup, as well as the fact that, and this was my other big takeaway from the game, the offensive line seems to be getting better. I mean, they're helped by Cooper Rush getting the ball out so quickly, but Tyler Smith looks like he can play, and that is a huge development for this team.
Yeah. And, I mean, they're helped by that, and they're helped by the two opponents that they just faced are not the Bucs.
True.
It makes it a lot better. And I do think that there's some benefit. Benefit's the wrong word. I haven't figured out how to properly articulate it, but having Dak out changes the mindset. I think with Dak in there, mm-hmm. Kellen Moore wants to set the world on fire. He wants to let Dak cook. And that is not always the move. And I think there's something to be said for, we're going to run the ball and we're going to play action, move the pocket sort of stuff, and not put a ton of pressure on offensive line. And if they don't have this dominant offensive line that they had years past, then yeah, that's nice. Let's take the pressure off of them. And it also takes the pressure off of the quarterback. I saw, like, a lot of the Cooper Rush plays were, I don't want to, like, high school plays comes to mind, but that feels like it's like I'm dissing them. That's not my goal at all. It's just like they're clearly designed for one person.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of plays, like, this guy's going to be open no matter what the coverage is.
Yes.
This guy's going to be open. If he's not open, check it down or tuck it or whatever. And that's like, takes a lot of pressure off of him. And if your defense is going to play really well and you're going to run the ball well, you're never going to get in a situation where the opposing defense knows you're passing. And that is where we will see Cooper Rush become Cooper Rush. If they're down and they just, like, have to throw it.
Well, I was just about to say, next week they've got the Commanders, so that's easy. I think the Rams would be the one where this very sort of, you know, simple play action centric offense, I would be curious to see how they hold up in that matchup. And of course, Aaron Donald against the interior of that offensive line is not a great matchup, and the Giants defense is really bad. But yeah, it does feel like, you know, very good game planning, a good execution on his part. Like, I got to say,
absolutely,
he's better than I thought. I didn't think he would be. He looks like one of the better backups in the NFL, is where I would, and, you know, like, really, we're talking about, like, two good drives. Yeah, you know, so, like, and probably should have thrown some picks last week. But it's enough. It's enough. Coupled with this opportunistic physical defense and what has been a very good running game as of late. So I think just, I was on First Take this morning with Stephen A. Uh-oh. And Michael Irvin.
Did you get any words in? Or are they just yelling at each other?
They were, Michael Irvin was very quiet when I was there. But I think he used up a lot of his, he had like a big rant at the beginning. I think he used up a lot of his, he's very nice, a very nice man, very sweaty, very damp. I was optimistic about the Cowboys because, like, look, I don't think they're on the same level as the Eagles. I don't view them as like a legitimate contender. Yeah. But as far as the wildcard landscape, it's very friendly to them. And then this is a team that, like, should get better. They get Tyron Smith back at some point. They get Michael Gallup back. The offensive line is gelling. And, you know, Dak Prescott probably had the hardest matchup of the entire season week one. So my concern would be, I since it's that thumb injury, and maybe this is just recency bias with Russell Wilson, do not rush him back, would be my take.
Right. I mean, and maybe there were more issues than just the thumb with Russell based on how he's playing now, because he's had time to have that thumb heal, and he's still not cooking. But a couple things came to mind for me in this game is, like, I recorded my podcast immediately after, so I'm taking notes through the course of the game, trying to, like, develop some sort of narrative to talk about. And it shifted. And I don't think I would have noticed that it shifted if it wasn't for the fact that I was taking the notes. So, like, my notes, like, leading up until halftime and a little bit after halftime is the Cowboys' playmakers were unable to step up. They did not step up. Because we're looking at Diggs dropping an interception. We're looking at CeeDee Lamb dropping a pass. We're looking at Pollard break a long run but not score. On the other side, we're looking at Saquon being able to break a run and score. And it just felt like, and we also, I had in my notes, like, they still can't get over this penalty issue. There's so many drives in the first half that ended because false starts, holdings, all this stuff. And then they prolonged Giants drives with personal fouls. And, like, that's, so now.
Some really stupid after ones, though. Not that weren't
yeah,
that terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bad, that was a bad call. But there were some other ones, too. I think they had, or maybe they didn't, but they had other penalties from the defensive side that prolonged drives. And I was just like, oh. This is the problem. We needed the big names to step up to help Cooper Rush, and they aren't stepping up. The Cowboys are a penalty team. They're still having those penalties, and that was what I was writing down and what I was thinking. And then the Giants took the lead, and everything changed. Everything just flipped. Then all of a sudden, they just started moving the ball and scoring, and, I mean, the defense was playing great all game. And it's just funny to me to think about how close it came to being the opposite, I guess.
Yeah.
And coming off these two games, they're in great shape. So it just was an interesting thought that I had.
Just shows you how thin the margins are for these types of things. I think, like, if, you know, CeeDee Lamb doesn't make that insane touchdown catch, for example, and, you know, and if some of those Giants actually catch the freaking football, we're talking about the undisciplined Cowboys. We're talking about, you know, the Lamb drop instead of the Lamb catch and how that was the difference in this game. Real quick on the Giants, I have not, you know, I've been as critical as of Daniel Jones. Well, I wouldn't say anyone, more so at the beginning. And I think in recent years, I've kind of softened. I think he's been better than I expected. He's not good enough to overcome his surroundings. He is just simply not one of those quarterbacks, but holy crap, his surroundings suck. I mean, which puts you in it from a take perspective, it puts us in such a challenging position, I think, because watching him, I was like, I don't really know how you can judge this guy because he's being screwed by his receivers. Obviously, their protection's getting killed. But then on the flip side, he does hold on to the football too long, and he does have like a seemingly, the whatever the opposite of spidey sense is, he has it where, like, he is just, you know, just cruising along, oblivious to that pressure on the, like, it puts you in a tough position, I think, as a New York fan, because I guess you want to move on. You probably should want to move on, but he has not been dealt a good hand.
Yeah, it's been tough on him. He did get sacked 5 times last night, right? And he managed not to fumble once. So congratulations. That's improvement. True. That man loves the fumble.
Even the ball with the it was who did they get on the offensive pass interference? I was on Shepard, I think, before he got hurt when he hit Diggs coming across, and it was incidental. Daniel Jones made a sick play on that where he was like, he dodged pressure, he was rolling to his right. Yeah, I forget who he found, but I was just like, damn, this dude cannot catch a break.
That wasn't even his best throw. Like, the other one where he had a lineman in his lap, he did, like, a jump pass and dropped it in that little sideline pass. Yeah, he's pretty – I mean, he's got some talent.
So I think – let's just wrap here. As a Giants fan, like, you feel good about your coaches, I think. They're doing the best they can with what they've got. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the last few drafts, it's just Andrew Thomas – hits. I mean, I don't think the pass rush really showed up in this game. So it's still early, obviously, for some of those. But and then it's still early for Evan Neal. So you can't really make too much. I guess Xavier McKinney is good. I'm just scrolling down.
Yeah.
Lawrence is fine. Was drafted too early. But then it is a brutal few drafts. So, yeah, it really feels like.
I mean, they have decisions this offseason between Jones and Barkley. My guess is that they move on from both of them. But, I mean, if they keep either, they keep Barkley. But maybe they keep Jones because they can get him cheap. Because, like, the problem with keeping Jones is you didn't pick up his fifth-year option, so you're looking at negotiating a new contract. And if he's a starting quarterback, you're going to have to pay him starting quarterback money, which, I mean, you don't have to pay him top of the league starting quarterback money, but you're going to have to pay him more than I think anyone would be comfortable paying Daniel Jones, seeing as he hasn't proven anything. And then Saquon, obviously, anyone who listens to this podcast understands the risk of committing a lot of money to the running back spot, or anyone who's watched the Cowboys in the past couple of years. Like, we understand the risk involved in that.
Daniel Jones feels like the kind of quarterback that some GM also would talk himself into.
Yeah. I mean, somebody who needs a quarterback will grab Daniel Jones. I mean, Mitchell Trubisky just got another shot. Daniel Jones is better than him.
I agree. I think he's better than Mitchell Trubisky. All right. Now for the sexy matchup.
Let's do it.
I need a word other than sexy. Enticing matchup. Alluring matchup. Provocative matchup.
No, those are not as good. Not as good. We have to workshop this.
Dolphins, Bengals. Just sex sells. it does. I think I don't have the lines in front of me, but I assume that the Dolphins are favored in this one. The Dolphins, who I saw you on Get Up this morning, refer to yourself as a Dolphin.
Oh, Dolphin.
Dolphin. Robert Griffin III said they're the best team in the NFL. I don't agree with that take, but I do think they're very good.
I'm not a Dolph addict.
Let's start here. Let's start from the Bengals' perspective, because obviously it's been an underwhelming start to the season for them. Last week against the Jets, they were able to get things going a little bit more, but I think the question is, okay, well, how much of that was the Bengals versus how much of it was the Jets giving them some more favorable coverage looks? Probably a little bit of both is my answer. how do you feel that they match up with the Dolphins defense that I thought just pitched a really nice game against Josh Allen?
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins defense, I think, matches up well. And maybe I'm just still looking at what happened last week, but I mean, I think Xavien Howard is very good. And I think the Dolphins are comfortable with giving up some plays because they are going to also create havoc and get some plays that go in their favor. That's the funny thing is when I watched that Dolphins game, it was like all their best plays came when they were blitzing and all their worst plays came when they were blitzing. And if they're comfortable with that, then I'm comfortable with it. So they have a lot of great skill players on the other side. Cincinnati does, but so do the Bills. So like, I'm not too incredibly nervous. I guess there's concern about Joe Burrow's athleticism, breaking tackles and turning stuff into big plays, but he also holds onto the ball, and you can't hold onto the ball consistently against zero coverage. It's just because they have more people than you can block. So. I don't know. It worries me. Quick balls to Chase. He'll break a tackle and go to crib.
Yeah.
That worries me. But I don't know. I just feel really good about their defense coming off of what they did last week.
I was actually really impressed by their four-man rush in the second. Because you're right. They were kind of like living and dying by the blitz early on where Josh Allen was slicing them up. They also like had two sacks and forced a fumble. But in the second half.
Two fumbles.
The second half, when they stopped blitzing quite as much. Or started just simulating it more often. I thought Ogba and Melvin Ingram were fantastic, and that was something that really jumped out to me. Is like, oh, they can do the style of defensive play that is in vogue right now, which is you don't blitz, you sit back, you just force the offense to work underneath, which is what they did to Buffalo, and then of course it worked out for them, you know, with those goal line stops. And I think that's what they should do against Bengals. Don't blitz Joe Burrow. I mean, I am still unconvinced by the Bengals' ability to solve those looks. They cannot run the ball. They didn't run it well against the Jets either. Joe Mixon is averaging like less than 3 yards per carry on the year. Ben Solak, friend of the show, I thought had a really nice piece of The Ringer talking about how some of that had to do with the fact that the Bengals almost exclusively run under center and throw out of the shotgun. So when you watch, defenses are kind of clued onto that, and they're more likely to play single high against the run. I did notice in the Jets game that they were mixing up a little bit and Joe Burrow was throwing more from under center and had some really big plays. So I'll be curious to see if that continues. But I just don't think the Bengals offensive line holds up against this Dolphins pass rush.
Yeah. I mean, the simulated blitz still gives their pass rush some advantage. You know, like it's with the line preparing for it, they're sliding different directions, you're creating one-on-ones. And I think and the quarterback is also nervous and ready to make some decisions quickly. So even showing the simulated pressure and dropping out like has an impact on the pass rush. But I guess there's also like a comfort level with what you're doing. And I'm with you. They're comfortable in zones and man coverage without zero blitz. But and this is personal bias, I guess, creeping in. I love playing zero coverage. Just like the idea that they don't have time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Like, I would rather do that as a corner than like, have a four-man rush and play man. Like, I'd rather not have a safety cover me because, like, I don't know. The quarterback's under pressure. It just feels better. So, I don't know. I guess I'm just speaking. You know, I understand Joe Burrow is better against man coverage, but I'm speaking as someone, assuming Xavien Howard is comfortable in zero coverage, I'd rather commit one way or the other. Yeah.
But, I mean, you know who else loves zero coverage? Ja'Marr Chase and T.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about the Dolphins, part of the reason they're able to do that isn't just up front, but we talk about Xavien Howard a lot. The other thing that really jumped out to me in the Bills game, I think Javon Holland might be one of the best free safeties in the NFL now. He was spectacular, and he is, obviously they had him blitzing and whatnot, but he has the ranginess as that center fielder, and there aren't that many true center fielder free safeties in this league that allows them to do different things up front, allows them to, Brandon Jones is the name of the other safety, he can blitz or play in the box or do whatever, and I think is probably like an underrated member of that secondary. And yeah, well, I mean, it's a big test for Cincinnati. I will say part of the reason why I think this is still a good game is the Bengals defense is playing really good football right now. It's been like kind of lost in the Bengals offensive struggles that have everyone freaking out, but they're good.
You see Tyreek and is coming at everybody's favorite corner, Eli Apple. He's like, after the game, he was saying he got something for Eli Apple, like he owes him something from that playoff game last year.
Because that Eli Apple had the tackle at the goal line, right?
I mean, I just, as a corner, can't, like, having Tyreek Hill call you out is not a fun place to be. But Eli Apple is better than me. He'll be all right. But that stinks.
Do you think he'll be all right? Do you think this defense can, I mean, because I said they're playing good, but that should come with a caveat, which is they've played pretty bad quarterbacks, and they kind of are exactly who they were last year, which is like well-coached, good tackling, decent pressure up front. I thought Trey Hendrickson was really good in this last game, but like, is it enough against, you know, the Dolphins track meet?
Yeah, the Dolphins track meet it's scarier on paper than it is on the field. You know, like, they had the one quarter against the Ravens. The Pats game was not bananas. This last game against the Bills was like a couple plays. So, I mean, I still would be terrified of them, especially when Tua's dropping 3rd-and-22 passes right on people. But the fact of the matter is they're not winning because they're blowing the doors off of people. Like, the Ravens blew a bunch of coverages, and I don't want to take anything from the Dolphins, but let's be honest about what's happening. It's like they're playing good team games and are winning them. They aren't like the greatest show on turf.
The 3rd-and-22, probably, I mean, the post to Waddle. Not only was it, I thought, like a good throw by Tua, granted, you know, didn't necessarily lead him, but like it was a good throw. The fact that they even attempted it tells you a lot about the mindset of this team. You know,
like
a lot
down
of
play on week one that they
went the fourth
for,
and seven,
right before halftime.
Like they are playing with a level of confidence right now on offense that is, I think, as a defensive coach, you're scared of because they just simply are unafraid to take risks. And I think, you know, Mike McDaniel is doing a fantastic job. We've talked on this podcast about his ability to create mismatches, the way he uses motion to seed doubt in the minds of defenders, and how the combination of that doubt with world-class speed is a nightmare. But you're right. They haven't been dominant. Like, if you really sit back and you look at what they've done this season and look at the numbers, and it's not been dominant. I think it's just the constant state of fear of a big play at any moment with any depth of target coming from so many different people is what makes it challenging. But like I said, I think the Bengals are really like fundamentally sound. They strike me as a team that like is, you know, they have two good safeties in Von Bell and Jesse Bates. That's really important against this Dolphins team. You got to have two good safeties. So, you know, this is.
Yeah. I mean, you're right, obviously, but I find it funny that you said this is I don't forget what terminology you used, but it just was, this was a measuring stick or a test, I think you said, a test for the Bengals. the Dolphins have already passed all their tests to the point that now they are a test for other teams. Because you called this game a test for the Bengals, the defending AFC champs, which I don't disagree with you. I just find it, like, amusing. But to the other thing you were saying, what I don't understand is how we have, or they have, Josh McDaniel, master run game coordinator.
Or Mike McDaniel.
They have two receivers that terrify everyone going deep, and they still can't run the ball. Like, effectively. In that last game, they had key runs at key moments.
Yeah.
But, like, I would expect them to run the ball better because they were doubling Tyreek on occasions, and I assume on the other side, especially last week with those young corners, they were very concerned with Waddle also. Run the ball. They should be able to – I don't know. I don't get it.
Do you think some of that is – listen, compared to the Bengals, it's like prime Adrian Peterson Miami. But do you think perhaps it has something to do with the fact that so much of the pass game is out of the gun now? Maybe – you know, Mike McDaniel coming from San Francisco, that run game was almost entirely under center.
Right. And why are they in the gun? Is it just Tua's comfort level? I would assume that, I don't know, if you can run the ball, you need to figure out whatever you can do to do that effectively and play action off of it. But what if?
You don't sound like a Dolphin.
I am a Dolphin, which is
you
why.
You sound like a Finn skeptic. What? That doesn't work.
I'm a Dolphin. I was high on the Dolphins before the season started, but then all these other people came and got on my train. You're one of these people. And then they go and aim the train to the moon. Like, chill out. Let's stay on the tracks for now and accept that we are not quite there yet.
There was a graphic that went out before the game that was like the bright young talent of the NFL, and it was like Mahomes, Allen, and Tua. Incredible. It's happening. I love it.
That's wild.
I think the Dolphins win this one. I said it was a test with the Bengals because I'm still this offense has not fixed itself to me just yet. So we'll see. All right, let's take a quick break and come back and talk about some winners and losers. All right, people, we are brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. See, it's not just about the daily promos, odds boosts, or the hundreds of ways to wager. It's about the immortal words of Caesar himself. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Every bet you place on the app, no matter the outcome, earns towards exclusive perks at Caesars Rewards destinations everywhere. Hotel stays, concert tickets, bonuses, and more. Download the Caesars Sportsbook app, become a Caesars Rewards member today, and get more with every wager. Must be 21 years or older to gamble. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-522-4700. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
All right, we are back with our weekly segment, Winners and... Say it.
Am I supposed to say Wolf?
Yeah.
Okay. Wolf.
You got the intonation right. Anyways, let's start with the winners. Dominic, you go first.
The Indianapolis Colts, my winner. Whew. We may not be able to say their names again in the course of this season on the winners column, so we should give them this winner now because this is going to be the biggest win they had all year. And I guess It should be. I mean, they have not been impressive. They beat this very good team, and so I didn't watch this game live. So I went back to watch it to see what happened and wanted to see them play well. And I did not see them play well. I saw special teams, faux pas, and mishaps, and drop touchdown passes, and Mahomes and Bieniemy bickering. Like, I did not leave that game feeling like, oh, Colts, it's a problem in the South. No.
It's so you for your winner just to be a total neg. What the heck? That whole spiel you gave was basically like...
Okay. Rookies made big plays at the end. They were opportune special teams plays. I don't know. Matt Ryan, game-winning touchdown pass. Colts, saddle up. I don't know. What do they say? Not let's ride.
No, you're right.
I can't make a horse noise. I feel like you could make a horse noise.
We tried to do dolphin noises on NFL Live the other day, and Marcus Spears got it, and I realized I can't do that. It's like a soft bark.
I don't know. That's chimpish. That was an excellent chimp. That was an excellent
chimp. Okay, I'm going to say something nice about the Colts, because I too didn't watch this game live. So I didn't watch it live. I saw the result. I was like, what the hell? Then I watched it later. Everything you said is correct. It was a comedy of errors for the Kansas City Chiefs. One thinks they will bounce back, but I think it's a little bit... I'm not concerned about the Chiefs fully, but they're on notice for me because they also had some, you know, like screw-ups versus the Chargers. And you know, they got... So they are... They're repeating what they did last year, which is just not simply not playing up to their ability yet again. And I know all the stuff you just described, the muff, all of it just happened, but still. The Colts, however. So I thought the offense looked bad. I think the Colts' offensive line is a nightmare, and I don't understand how they're so bad. I actually texted Jeff Saturday, how are they so bad? Because I don't understand how they're so bad. And he gave me a very long, detailed explanation. But I will say, I thought the defensive line looked really good in this game. And that was something that had kind of confused me with the first 2 weeks of the season, because I thought this Colts defense would be good, even without Shaquille Leonard. But, you know, the fact that they had Ngakoue and DeForest Buckner and then Kwity Paye, who I thought was good last year. And then the first 2 weeks of the season, nothing. In this game, they won up front a lot against, you know, what is a decent to good Kansas City, Kansas City offensive line. I thought Kwity Paye was awesome. Buckner, Grover Stewart at nose, like they look like the defense that we expected. Also, shout out to Gus Bradley, deviating a little bit from his cover three. We got to give our man Gus some praise there.
Give Gus some love. Yeah, that was impressive. He did some other things, but offensive line is a problem. That's supposed to be the strong suit. That's why aging quarterbacks wanted to come there, because this was like, hey, we got an offensive line. We got a running game. They used to have receivers, which I guess they don't.
I thought the rookie looked pretty good. Alec Pierce finally playing. You know, I thought.
Yeah, I guess I was talking about why someone would want to come there. Not now. So it's got to be disappointing to be there with a bad offensive line, because that's the whole point of coming there. They got a really expensive guard, which. I think it might have been on this podcast. I do a lot of talking about football, but I was talking about how interior linemen are like, if you're ranking most difficult positions to play in football, like interior line play is probably at the bottom of that list.
It's a wild thing to say. What you should use is your piece of evidence that freaking 65-year-old Jason Peters came in and like was really good for the Cowboys.
I mean, and the evidence is just like when somebody's not good enough to play tackle, they put them at guard.
You know, like I'm going to clip this and send it to Mike Golic Jr.
He knows it. Clip it and send it to him. And he's going to clip it and send it back and say, he's right. But anyway, there's a lot of money tied up in a guy who is not going to like definitively change your fortunes like a left tackle might some other position. So anyway, that team is, they fall into the bottom ish of that division fast, and I thought they were one of the teams that could like.
And there's Dominique's people. Winner. you really understand the concept?
Yeah, that was just a bad. I'm sorry, I double wolfed this week. I'm sorry, I apologize, Indianapolis. Double wolf.
I would say actually the thing that is a bigger bummer for the Colts is that the Jags actually look good. We'll talk about. I'm talking about the Jags on my preview episode this week, but they look good, and that would be concerning because I think that was the thought that the Colts would run away with this division. Okay, my winner is an easy one. It's an obvious one. It is Lamar Jackson. I forgot his middle name. I typed that in my email. Demetrius, I think.
Demetrius.
You're usually really on top of middle names, so yeah. I tried to steal that move from you.
I was disappointed that you didn't say it the way that you emailed it. I mean, you
That's
emailed
how it's
it
spelled.
In all caps.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, but you emailed it in all caps with the middle name, and then you just said Lamar Jackson when you got on here. He deserves all three
names. Just to let you into my brain a little bit, the reason I didn't say it, I was planning on saying it, but then once I started, I wasn't confident that I had the pronunciation right, so I just backed off of it immediately. Anyways.
It's spelled D-meat rice.
D-meat.
I just noticed that.
It's an unusual spelling. It's unusual. I don't want to mess it up. If anyone knows how he says it, please get at me. I'm trying to think of something new to say about him.
There's nothing new to say. He's great.
Here's what I love that's different. The pass game looks better holistically. And that was, like, we knew what Lamar's capable of. We've seen him shred the blitz before. He's shredding the blitz this year. We've seen him operate from the pocket. We've seen how dangerous he is as a runner. He somehow looks even better this year. What we haven't seen, however, is a Ravens passing attack that actually put the fear of God in people. And I don't know if it's, I mean, there's a lot of things going on. I would say like Rashad Bateman taking another step. I think Devin Duvernay has been very good this year, shockingly. Yeah. And then of course, Mark Andrews, all of a sudden you're like, wait, it's actually a decent group of pass catchers in Baltimore. Yeah. And Greg Roman is finding ways to get them open. And I think Lamar is making tight window throws and doing all the things you want him to do. But I think the combination of his own improvement with the improvement of his circumstances is pretty exciting if you're a Ravens fan.
I have to admit that what surprised me the most is he has guys making plays for him.
Yes.
Which is something that I'm not accustomed to seeing from anyone other than like Mark Andrews on occasion will make like a wild one-handed catch. But in this game, Mark Andrews was taking passes off of the backs of defenders. Rashad Bateman, in all the games so far, Rashad Bateman, yards after catch, he gets open and then he gets deep down the field, yards after catch. And Duvernay, who like I think we just kind of thought of as a special teams guy, turned out to be a really good receiver and like tracking the ball.
I was going to say,
It's like the stuff that, he's a good receiver. And it's not just like Lamar's setting them up, because sometimes it's tight coverage and they're making plays. So, like, that's encouraging if you're a Ravens fan, scary if you're not, because Lamar's already, like, I mean, terrifying, put the team on his back type of good. If he also has people to take pressure off of him, which is like all these other big-name quarterbacks that we talk about tend to have those guys. If he has those guys too and they're not asking him to do so much, he can just like throw it out in Duvernay's area and he could make a play for you, or Bateman. Like that'll be something.
The one concern I have is I'm not sure if Ronnie Stanley's going to play. Like the way they're talking about him is the way you hate to hear if you're a fan, which is, we don't know, you know, one day at a time. It's a long season. And in the Pats game, they were down to their backup tackle, Daniel Falele. And it showed. So I think the offensive line was the concern I had coming into the season, despite the improvements they made. I thought they did look really good run blocking, however, against New England, which was encouraging because that run game has actually been kind of sus through the first 2 weeks of the season. But if Ronnie Stanley can't play, that would be an issue for me, I think, against a better pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but still, you got Lamar, so that makes it a little bit better. I mean, it'd be less of an issue for Lamar than it would be for other people.
Yeah.
It's been so long for Ronnie Stanley. Like, it's so concerning. Glad he got paid when he did for him and his family or whatever. But it sucks because he was like one of the best tackles in football and was young. And it just feels like him and Lamar were going to be together for a while and doing special things. And he hasn't been there in a couple seasons and it's terrible. And there's no like, yeah, there's no prognosis for like, oh, yeah, we're just working through some things. He had a minor setback. It's just like,
Yeah, well, hopefully sooner rather than later. I mean, they're winning without
playing well on defense, though.
Yeah, they play better on defense in this one, which was encouraging.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow, MinaShow, today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow.
All right. Woofs. You go first.
All right. My wolf, Washington Commanders. Carson Wentz got sacked 9 times. And I know we blame quarterbacks for sacks. We also need to blame offensive lines for sacks. We blame their secondary for being their secondary. This team had what I thought was an impressive win in week one. Like, I thought the Jaguars were like a formidable opponent. They played well in that game and it was like encouraging. Carson Wentz, I was watching the game like, this Carson Wentz experience might be okay. Like, he's going to mess up every now and then, but it feels like this team is in. They knew what they were getting. And they're like, because after he threw like some ridiculous interceptions, they kept letting him air it out and he made some incredible passes. And I was like, yeah, this team is just going to be volatile on offense, but there's going to be some good. And then this was just meh. And that, like, I think also on the heels of more news about the owners trying to push Daniel Snyder out, just made me think this whole organization, the history of it, the recent history, the long-term history, the most recent game, it just is. And I live in D.C. It's just a sad, sad place for the organization to be, and they keep rolling Ron Rivera out there to make him say something that's supposed to make us feel better, and it doesn't work.
As a Washington fan, what do you feel good about right now? Like, what, when you look at everything, all the decisions they've made, obviously I think we see that they're not a contender competitive this season. Wentz, I thought like half the sacks were on him, half were on the offensive line, to be honest.
Enough to go around.
It was like that Joe Burrow Titans game where it's like you can make a little pie showing who's on. Is this one scheme? Is this one Wentz? I mean, he really holds onto the football way too long. I think I grabbed this afterwards. He has the 7th longest time to release, but all the other quarterbacks are dual threats. I mean, he can move, but, you know, we're... actually, there was one quarterback. Let me see. Cousins has but he boots out a lot too, which the thing that's most concerning is 35% of his pressures turn into sacks, which is the second highest in the NFL behind Daniel Jones. So it's not just like, okay, you know, what's the offensive line doing? What's the scheme? Are we protecting him? But he lacks pocket presence, and that's just been a quality of his for a really long time, where he's going to make an offensive line look worse. I started this sentence by saying, let's talk about the things you feel good about. Okay.
It's McLaurin still a good receiver and group. Dotson.
Yeah. There it's go. A good receiver That's group. It. Jonathan Allen is good.
Yeah.
Sweat,
good.
Yeah.
Young will be healthy eventually.
Young will be healthy. The secondary was missing some guys, but they're bad.
Yeah.
It's Davis has been really up and down. I mean, look at the draft picks in recent years. I guess Cam Curl is a safety. He's okay. Like, it's just, you know, you start wondering, okay, what can we build around here? And it does feel like they're in a pretty, I would say not too dissimilar from New York, honestly. I mean, with New York, I know there, I think there's like some juice around that team because the head coach people like, but it's a similar state of play where they're, you know, you're kind of looking around, you're looking at the last few drafts and you're questioning, okay, who is our core that we're going to rebuild around?
They're not there.
I guess
I've never heard anybody build around a pair of receivers. That's not something that I'm accustomed to.
Did you see the reports that they tried to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo and the surgery got in the way?
Yeah. I mean,
it would be a very different offense.
It would be. I don't think the results would be all that different. They would have lost week one.
Yeah.
I don't know that they would be better with Jimmy Garoppolo. At least with Carson Wentz, you have that high-end potential that he could string together five or six impressive throws before he turns it over. I mean, I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm just saying at least you have that. With Jimmy Garoppolo, you don't have that.
All right, my woof, I think, is sadder because yeah. Should I reverse these and should we end on winners? What do you think? Is this like...
You want to end on a good note?
We can mix them. We can do winner, woof, okay. Woof, winner, just to kind of like,
a little,
yeah.
Little
all right,
sandwich.
Next week I'll do that. All right. I have to go with the LA Chargers. Some brutal injuries across the league. Speaking of Jimmy Garoppolo, the Niners losing Trent Williams for a few weeks really sucks. And I thought the offensive line actually looked better against Denver than they have. But, you know, once he went out, obviously that caused huge problems for them. And then... there was another big injury. It's escaping my mind right now. But I don't think there's a bigger one league-wide than the Chargers losing Rashawn Slater for the entire season. On top of like a litany of injuries that are day-to-day. We'll see if Joey Bosa's out for a few weeks. They lost Jalen Guyton for the season, who's their deep threat wide receiver. You know, Corey Lindsley's been banged up. I think, God, the list of injuries just continues to mount and mount. But the Slater one, that's like... I would say on that team, probably the one player you couldn't lose. Because if you lose, like, maybe Bosa, but you have Mac. You okay?
What? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. It's just like you talk about all these injuries and the player that you could least afford to be injured, and you never named the quarterback. I was just confused.
Oh, I meant other than the quarterback, obviously.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, you know, sorry.
His injury is the worst one.
Yeah, right.
And the most, like, it didn't seem like it was hurting him the way he was throwing passes across his body deep down the field. But it was obviously impacting him other times. But, yeah, this team, I don't know. Sometimes we talk about curses of teams, and I think that
we talked about it on this show, and you said you didn't think – let's play the audio.
And, I mean, I'm joking. They're not cursed. I don't believe in curses. But Matt Ryan's not this bad.
The Chargers are kind of cursed.
Yeah.
So did I curse the Chargers by bringing up the Chargers curse?
No, you can't curse a team by bringing up the fact that they're already cursed. Like, that's maybe the curse fell asleep. Maybe you woke the curse up. The curse heard its name. It was like, oh yeah, let's get back to it.
Well, I don't know what it's going to take. I mean, you could say it's like, oh, the city of San Diego because they left, but the freaking Rams left St. Louis and then won a Super Bowl. So the curse doesn't apply to them.
I mean, and the Chargers were cursed in San Diego. Like, it was,
yeah, right.
They
this
were
curse goes
the
back.
Same situation. Like, this is, I don't know what they did somewhere along the line, but they need to right this wrong.
There's people you can hire to undo these things, like witches, to like undo hexes. For me, I started this by saying it was sadder than the Washington thing. It's just so brutal because this was a team that was supposed to make a Super Bowl run this year. And Dominique, even if Bosa comes back and even if Herbert heals up, the Slater thing, am I overstating? First of all,
no.
There's no left tackles out there. None.
No.
None.
It's the hardest position.
No one on the team. They had Storm Norton, who was benched from playing a right tackle, moved to left tackle in this game. I don't know what, maybe they'll mix them around and whatever, but.
Yeah, it's dire right now, and they are just leaving Herbert out there to get smacked around. Let him get right. I mean, I guess the.
That's another thing.
Yeah, I understand playing him. Like, I played football. I get it. I don't know that it was a good idea, but I understand it. But then leaving him out there?
It sounds like, and I've heard that, like, he wanted, he was pushing him out there, which is, yeah, of course he was.
Yeah,
you know, he's like going to do. 24, yeah. You got it. You got to stop. That was, I feel like too many things happened in the NFL for that to be, like, a massive story. Like, maybe if that had happened at a night game, I think we would probably let a lot of the shows, would have really gone after the Chargers for that, but that was wild. And man, to do it without Slater out there, I don't want to say the season is over, because we've seen Justin Herbert play with bad protection before. His rookie season, he did not have Rashawn Slater, and you know, he has the athleticism to compensate for that, but he doesn't have it right now. He does not. And I think
a crazy game. I'm sorry. There's no other professional sport that injuries are so inevitable. Like, every sport, injuries are impactful when they happen, but there's no other sport that I watch regularly that, like, injuries are so inevitable. And, like, you know you're entering the season, and, like, basketball, it's a good chance you're going to end the year with your same starting five. Like, your seven-man rotation going to be your seven-man rotation. Baseball, similar thing. Like, whatever other sports, it's just so crazy that we do so much analysis, but we know that two or three important guys on every team are going to miss a substantial amount of time, and then we go into the season and talk about this like we know it, and then everything is turned on its head after 3 weeks.
Also, the nature of his injury, the rib cartilage, something about rib injuries that are so much more graphic to me. Maybe it's because I eat ribs.
You can, like, visualize them.
Well, you imagine,
they, like, protect, like all the good organs. Yes! Like, with the exception of your brain, all the good ones, all the ones that you need are protected by your ribs. You got a cranium and ribs. Those two need to hold up.
I feel like ribs should be something you can replace, like Wolverine with, like, titanium.
Well, cartilage you can't, though.
Oh, right, it's his cartilage, yeah. So yeah. Ugh. I don't know.
It just seems so painful, too.
It seems so painful. I've never had
anything like that, but I've heard, like, even breathing hurts. And, I mean, I'm sure it doesn't hurt in the game because they put all types of things in there. But I guarantee you, 6-7 hours after the game, that thing is on fire.
Brutal. All right, let me ask one more question. Do you think the Chargers are done this season?
They lost their best offensive player, who's not the quarterback, their best defensive player. I mean, I guess Derwin's better, but Joey's really important, and their quarterback is hobbled, and they're in a tough division. The problem with that is everybody else is, like, beatable too. Brandon Staley is not really well respected as far as coaching's concerned. I don't know that I don't think they win a division anymore. I picked them to win a division, which was foolish of me.
That's the issue about the coaching. But yes, I don't think they're done, because I think the quarterback is so good that if he can retain a modicum of health, we saw what he did with a bad offensive line his rookie season, right? And he's a better quarterback now. However, they are no longer, like, a favorite the way they were. Now I view them as, like, on the wild card fringe, you know, that is a woof. All right, Dominique, let's do better next week. More positivity. Because we really did woof, 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 triple woofs.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's on me. I brought a winner that was really, I just really planned on woofing them. I'll be better next week. True winners next week. I promise.
All right, I'll see you then.
All right, buddy.